You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I've been talking about stories in the news for the last several weeks, but we forget about history. There are lessons that hopefully should be learned from history. And I've been doing some reading on jihad by someone that actually interviewed various generations of jihadists and getting their perspective. And then I asked myself, well, what was the first jihad? Or more precisely, what was the first jihad that resulted in Americans being killed? It's not ancient history. It's fairly recent, but it's over 32 years ago. And that was in Lebanon. And the organization that did this, and this was one of the early suicide bombers as well, was called the Islamic Jihad, or more precisely, the Islamic Jihad Organization. It turns out, although it's never been admitted, that the orders for these bombings came from what's today called the Islamic Republic of Iran. Yes, Iran, the country that President Obama negotiated an agreement with, not a treaty, an agreement, that will provide Iran at some future date, if they don't have it already, a nuclear bomb. I want you to think about that as I go through this story and remind you a little of the history. Now, I'm not going to get into the details because it would take hours and you would quickly turn it off. There was a civil war in Lebanon for 15 years, and it had many groups killing, kidnapping, killing, torturing in a very, very small country. You had Christians killing Muslims. You had Shia killing Christians and killing Sunnis, Sunni Muslims. You had Sunni Muslims killing Christians and Shia. You had the United States involved in it, as well as Russia and Syria intervening in it because they're right next door. It went on for 15 years. Prior to that, Lebanon was very much a resort city. Beirut was a resort city, the Paris of the Mediterranean. But as a result of the Civil War, over 100,000 people died, close to 200,000. And much of Beirut was destroyed. That war ended in 1990, and the people now very much regret on both sides their involvement in this civil war. The United States really didn't take sides. There was a joint peace mission where France, the United States, Great Britain, Italy sent a multinational peace force to try to, again, act as umpire and get any other nations out and bring the peace to Lebanon. It didn't work. First, the year is important. It was 1983. The president was Ronald Reagan. And the first suicide bomb attack of the Islamic Jihad. And they were part of what eventually became Hezbollah. Iran, as it's doing today, was doing then, uses proxies, as were other nations. The Soviet Union was still in existence, very much in existence. The Cold War was still on, but that's not only what divided people. This was very much a religious, sectarian civil war with the big powers, the Soviet Union, the United States, as well as the European powers involved. And you had group groups after groups killing each other. For a period of 15 years, what happened is exactly what's happening in Syria today. Lebanese that could left the country, many of them never to return, if you were fortunate to do that, or fled to and it could be to Europe, most likely, some to the United States. But people fled because you no longer had business as usual. You were in the middle of a war, a civil war, a very violent civil war, with each side, as one of the combatants said, we didn't take any prisoners. If we caught, and he was talking to a mother of a son that was killed, if we caught your son, we killed him. We couldn't keep prisoners. Many were lined up on a wall and shot if they were captured or kidnapped. Many died just fighting each other. Buildings were destroyed. But the first suicide bomb that involved Americans in a foreign country was the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. 63 people were killed. 17 of those 63 people were Americans, either of the embassy or CIA staff, as well as Marines. And it was the story. Now, what quickly happened after a second bombing occurred is the United States pulled out of Lebanon because they saw that the price that they and other nations were paying simply wasn't worth it. This is a lesson, unfortunately, that the United States has not learned. When you intervene in a country, yes, initially you'll be considered by many of the native population as being liberators. But that quickly deteriorates into you being considered occupiers, and the native population starts killing you, either by rifle fire, mines that they lay in the street, improvised explosive devices, any way they can, because they quickly view you as the enemy, not a friend, an enemy. And because we're allied with Israel, and they know it, that's just another reason for them to attack you if you're intervening in a Muslim country where Muslims are a majority or even a minority. You would think that the United States government, whether led by a Republican or Democrat, would have learned that lesson. Well, we haven't. And then what got everyone's attention because of the sheer magnitude of it was a bombing, again, another suicide bombing. Actually, there were two that more or less happened at the same time, of the Marine barracks in Beirut. Now, it's important to emphasize that the reason why the United States was there as part of a multinational force in Lebanon that was trying to stop the violence, stop the sectarian civil war that was going on. It didn't work out too well. Because, again, the same organization, the Islamic Jihad, sent a suicide bomber, and they target the building where our Marines, actually the headquarters group, most of them were sleeping at the time. It was a four-story building. They also sent another suicide bomber to attack a building, not the same building, but the Karkar, I'm mispronouncing it, building, where the French paratroopers were using again as barracks, killing 58 French paratroopers. In total, 299 American soldiers and French soldiers were killed. Not quite three times the number that died in Paris last week. Who sent them? Again, Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And they're still at war with us. This is really not stopped because the group that did this was associated with what is now called, the names do change, Hezbollah. And Hezbollah today is supporting the Assad regime in Syria. Why? Because the Assad family are Alawites, which are Shia. That's the religious connection, if you will. And that's a major theme of all these civil wars or interventions. You're fighting people and nations that have, for generations and for many, many years, lived in peace. But periodically what happens is a civil war breaks out, and then you have each side forming militias, think of them as gangs, that go after their opponents that have a different religion. In the case of the Shia, they're going after the Sunnis. And today in Syria, it's the Sunni rebels that are trying to overthrow the Assad regime. That also includes al-Nusra, which is part of al-Qaeda, and the Islamic State, which is at one time was called al-Qaeda in Iraq, that have broken, split off from al-Qaeda al-Nusra. and now have gone their own way and have claimed responsibility for the bombings in Paris. The point I'm trying to make is very little has changed in terms of the underlying themes. You have foreign powers involved today. Again, Russia and Syria. And before then, you have the Soviet Union, the predecessor of Russia, again in Syria. The United States didn't learn its lesson from Lebanon. Now, some would say they did learn their lesson. A point is made is those that believe in Islamic Jihad, whether they be Sunni or Shia, watch what the Americans do, as well as watch what the Russians of the Soviet Union did in terms of reacting. Shortly after this bombing, Ronald Reagan pulled out our peacekeeping forces. The reason I'm going over this is many young people are totally unaware of this. Yet the bombing was significant in many ways. Just the sheer size of the explosive, there were 21,000 TNT used. It collapsed the building totally, and people were buried under. They were killed as the building collapsed, and it was concrete building reinforced. It was a four-story building, and I have pictures of it. I need to say this. If you're new to the show and want to get more information on what I'm talking about, what I suggest you do is go to my companion blog for the show, and this is show 377, I believe. Let me double-check that. I haven't put that in yet. Anyway, it's today's show. It's the Wednesday show of November 18th. If you go there, I'll have hopefully we'll have the show posted by tomorrow morning. I'm going to shoot for tonight, but I don't want to make any promises. And you can listen to the show there, but underneath the links to the various shows, I have a lot of information. I have maps, pictures, diagrams of both bombings. You see, this was the story for many weeks in the United States, just like the Paris story of the suicide bombings is very much an international story. Obviously, a lot of attention to the story is being played in the French press because that's where it happened. But I would even say, and I wasn't there. I actually met someone that was in the embassy that day, a Marine. He remembers it. The embassy bombing I'm talking about. Most of the people in those barracks died in their sleep. They never knew what hit them. But that TNT explosion, other than nuclear weapons, was the biggest explosion that we've had other than nuclear weapons. It had a powerful impact given the way the bomb was constructed. Now, I'm not going to get into details. But the common denominator here is it, again, was a suicide bomber. The difference is the person, the bomber, was actually a Shia, and again, acting upon the orders of the Islamic Republic of Iran, even though they haven't admitted there is intelligence that they were responsible. But they were of the Islamic faith, admittedly the minority branch. Unlike Paris today, where we had several suicide bombers, that's the one big difference, that were sent by the Islamic State. Not really that far away if you look at a map, because the Islamic State headquarters is in Raqqa in Syria, eastern Syria. And what they're doing is sending out suicide bombers to attack multiple targets, actually well-planned and executed suicide bombings. Now, it hasn't been of the magnitude, thank God, of the Marine barracks, but I think, unfortunately, that's just a matter of time. And the Islamic State has promised to attack Washington. The American people depend on the United States government, especially its intelligence agencies, the National Security Agency, as well as the Central Intelligence Agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, to protect the American people from these types of suicide attacks. In both cases, the person doing it was a religious fanatic. They were brave in the sense they knew they were going to die. And they went ahead to do it because they were going to be with God. They look forward to doing it. And that's what you need to understand. They welcome this death. That hasn't changed. The question is, what do you do about it? What do you do about it? You see, I've said and continue to say, we have been at war with Iran ever since the fall of the Shah. What Iran does is use proxies. In other words, groups that they support, train, provide intelligence, such as Hezbollah, to fight their perceived enemies. And Israel and the United States are number one and two on that list. In addition to secular regimes, Muslim regimes, as well as what they would consider corrupt, despotic regimes such as Saudi Arabia. And they have attacked and killed members of the Islamic State, as has members of the Islamic State attacked them. But they both agree that we're the enemy. And they both agree that they want to establish a caliphate under Sharia law. So there are some common elements, even though they're sworn enemies, and their militias and their fighters don't take prisoners. If they capture you, they kill you. Or they might torture you and then kill you. It depends how busy they are. Now, I'm going over this for a reason. I woke up this morning, and I've been having sleep problems in the sense my hay fever is really keeping me up. But the alarm went off, and I was listening to the Bill Bennett show. And he was interviewing, I believe, an Army general and asking him some specific questions as to, could we take out the Islamic State? And the general said, yes, we could, but it's never going to happen. Why? We have a president that doesn't want to intervene, doesn't want to commit ground troops to a war with the Islamic State. So it's not a question of whether the United States has the capability to destroy the Islamic State. I never had any doubts. But there's something that both sides never mention, whether it's the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, and whether it's the neoconservatives in the Republican Party or the community organizers in the Democratic Party. I'm very much a believer in our representative republic, what's left of it. I say that because increasingly the Constitution has become a dead letter. You see, if you truly want to go to war, and that's what we're talking about, go to war with the Islamic State, declare war. That's what the Constitution provides. Make the case. I don't think it's that hard to make the case. But get the support of the American people up front in the beginning. That's what neither Republican nor Democratic presidents do. Now, some of them will get authorization, and which means funds, go to Congress and ask for it. Well, that's fine, but that's not what the Constitution says, and I'm not quibbling about the form that the declaration of war should take. Before any politician or any talk radio show host wants to advocate war with any country or group, insists that they first make the case, but insists that our Congress declare war. They don't want to do that. They don't. I've lost count. I think it's over 100 times that the United States has been at war. And we never, president doesn't do it, Congress doesn't do it, declare war. Now, why is that important? I can have my opinion and you can have your opinion. You need to convince the representatives, your House representative, as well as your senator, that you favor it. You want to get the commitment or buy-in of the people if you're going to take this nation to war. The writers of the Constitution knew this was critical because they saw what happens when you have a tyrant, whether it be a king, monarch, dictator, and now president. There's a great temptation for the executive branch to start wars, and that has happened throughout the history of the United States. In other words, the constitutional provision that requires a declaration of war be declared by the legislative branch, not, in other words, Congress, the House and the Senate, has rarely been exercised. It's been exercised several times, obviously World War I, World War II, and there have been a few other times prior to that. But in modern times or post-World War II, it hasn't been, whether it's Vietnam or the Korean War or the many other wars, including several in Iraq. I think we need to get back to the Constitution and follow it. In other words, don't betray the Constitution or betray your oath. Insist on it. Because many people think that they have the majority of the American people with them when they don't. When they simply don't. Now, I'm not for bringing back the draft. I'm totally against the draft. But when we had the draft and we got into situations of undeclared wars that lasted several years, guess what happened? You had protests on campus. That's what happened in the Vietnam War, no matter what side of that war you were on. We don't seem to have that today. Presidents can commit troops, as well as the Central Intelligence Agency, and start wars. The most recent was in Libya. And now we're on the brink, I think, and it might take another year or a couple of months, of being at war with the Islamic State. You see, we are already at war with the Islamic State. When you have U.S. fighter jets bombing various targets, vehicles, buildings of the Islamic State, we're at war. You wouldn't really know it except for the news. And it hasn't been a total war, and that's part of the problem. See, that's one of the reasons I recommend declaring war, because then you must make the case, and it must be very, very clear this is a total war, and we will, as is the nature of war, kill innocent civilians. That has to be clearly understood, and we're not going to have these ridiculous rules of engagement. During World War II, both in Germany and Japan, hundreds of thousands of innocent Germans and Japanese were killed. Most of the people that died, for example, in the firebombing of Dresden in Germany, as well as the firebombing of Tokyo's and the cities in Japan, most of those deaths were innocent civilians, as were our two nuclear explosions. That's what total war is about. The way you win war is you destroy the enemy, both combatants and non-combatants, or civilians. There are no innocents. You need to totally, completely destroy the Islamic State. Now, this general that Bill Bennett was talking to put out a number. We need 500 missions a day. Well, that's a good start, because we haven't had 500 missions a day. We have a few a day, if any. Over a long period of time, it adds up. But if you're really serious, if you're truly at war with the Islamic State and not containing it, it's not a cold war with the Islamic State. It's a hot war. And that's what we're about. It shouldn't be a few missions or sorties every day. The phrase that comes to mind is carpet bombing. You see, we could destroy most, not all, most of the Islamic State military equipment and ammunition and supplies by carpet bombing, sending over waves of B-52s, B-1s, B-2s, and we would quickly run out of targets. Oh, they are spread out, and it would take time, but that's what we need to do. Will we do it? No, why not? Right now, today, the American people, as well as the French people, are quite upset about the terrorist bombs that were set off in Paris that killed over 100 people. I believe the count is 129, as well as the terrorists, the suicide bombers. But that's not the end of it. The Islamic State, they don't take prisoners. They view us as crusaders. And they're at war with the crusaders, the Jews, in other words, the Israelis or Zionists. And they are at war with the Shia or Shiites of Iraq and Iran, and anyone that disagrees with their religion. It's either convert or die. And many times they don't give you the chance to convert. They just kill you. If they determine you're one of their enemies, if you're lucky, you'll get a bullet in the head. If you're not unlucky, they'll cut your throat or torture you first. I agree that the objective should not be containment of the Islamic State. It should be its total and complete destruction. And the United States needs to take a leadership role. That requires the president to make the case to the American people for a declaration of war. Will he do it? No, he won't do it. The phrase that they use today is absolutely, absolutely not. We're not going to intervene. You see, I agree with the president that we need to contain and ultimately destroy the Islamic State. But the primary responsibility of doing that in terms of ground forces, troops, is it has to be, first of all, an Arab army as well as a Sunni army. In other words, the soldiers have to come from Egypt, Turkey, Jordan, and yes, Saudi Arabia. That is the core coalition that must go into Iraq and Syria and take out the Islamic State. Is that going to happen? Not under this president. He likes to use the phrase strategic patience. I describe it as running out the clock, because he knows in January of 2017, another president will be sworn in, and at that point, he's going to get a lot of rest, play a lot of golf, and it's someone else's problem. Up until that point, he is not going to commit U.S. ground troops, and he's not going to make much of an effort to, by various means, set up organize, lead, provide intelligence for a coalition that includes Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt. I'm not saying that's easy, but that's what he's paid for, to protect the American people. The Islamic State has already killed Americans. They've beheaded a number of people that they captured from Great Britain as well as the United States, reporters, aid workers that were unfortunately kidnapped, kept for a while, some tortured, some raped, and then killed, and used for propaganda purposes to try to provoke the United States as well as the nations of Europe. It's no accident you're seeing YouTube videos of their executions of people that fall into their hands. They're terrorists. Terror is what they're masters of, as well as propaganda. And they very much are trying to provoke the American people, the French people, the Russian people, and the Turkish people against them. They want to die. They are very much suicidal as well as homicidal. They must be destroyed. And dragging it out or running out the clock or strategic patience is going to mean more innocent civilians, whether Europeans of whatever nation as well as Americans, dying. It will also mean more Muslims, whether in Syria or Iraq, will also die. They must and will be destroyed. Will this president do it? No. There's no point in my mind even trying to persuade him. He's made up his mind. The situation is this, and there's a very apt description of it. It's called invincible ignorance. In other words, don't confuse me with the facts. I've already made up my mind. And he has. You see, the difference between where I'm at and President Obama is at is he won't lead. In other words, I agree with him. I wouldn't send any ground troops in. I would limit our involvement in providing air support as well as special forces that can be used to train people that are going to fight them, fight the Islamic State, as well as try to see or identify targets so our fighter aircraft or bombers can take out various elements of the Islamic State. See, much of this country is desert, folks. It's wide open desert with towns such as Aleppo and Raqqa. Their headquarters is Raqqa, and that's in the eastern portion of Syria. They also control the western portions of Iraq. Now, you got to keep in mind the Iranians are no friends to the Islamic State, because the Islamic State is Sunni. They're really Salafist, which is a sect of Sunni, which is the major branch of Islam. That's why they're supporting Assad in Syria. Even though Assad is Alawite, that is a sect of Sunnis. So not much has changed except the target. Because in 1983, who was the target of these suicide bombs? American citizens and American soldiers. Our embassy staff in Beirut, our CIA staff in Beirut, and our Marines that we sent in as peacekeepers together with the French, the British, and Italy to try to separate the parties and lead, hopefully, to a lasting peace. Well, that didn't happen. The civil war in Beirut lasted into 1990, and why Beirut's being rebuilt and now it's peaceful, you still have memories of that amongst the people that went through it. You don't have memories of that of the young that were not born then and now are adults, either teenagers or in their 20s. And we could get another civil war there once the Islamic State is destroyed. What you're really talking about is a balance of power. Barack Obama's foreign policy, as well as Hillary Clinton's contribution to that, as well as John Kerry, has been to fundamentally destabilize North Africa as well as the Middle East, with the objective of overthrowing the secular leaders or dictators of those countries and supporting either the Muslim Brotherhood or those Muslims that are against the oppression of the dictator. For example, that's why Obama wants to overthrow Assad. It's been very much an oppressive, brutal regime, both under his father and son. And you got to understand why the religion aspects of this is played up. What we're really talking about is power. Who's in power and what means they will use to stay in power. And it's very clear that the Assad regime will use any means. And that's why they reach out to Russia, China, and Iran. You see, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's like 1983. We need to elect a president that's not part of the establishment of either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. Hillary Clinton would be a disaster if she were to be elected president. I don't think she will be. I think she will be the nominee, but will not be elected, because her performance as Secretary of State is damning. And I think, as of right now, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee, even though the Republican establishment doesn't want him to be. That's too bad. And he will be the next president. Why? His message resonates with the American people. Donald Trump has said, I heard him today, I was driving in, and it surprised me because he was on the Savage Show. And I don't usually listen to most of the Savage Show. I only really catch the first maybe half hour, and I was running a little late, but he was on the show. I was a little surprised because a couple of shows ago, he was critical of Donald Trump, as was I, of the same thing, because Donald Trump went after Ben Carson. I thought that was a real loser mistake. There was no need to. Now, Trump was trying to make the point. Listen, it's politics. I'm up against, 15 people. Now it's 14. One dropped out. And in politics, you go after the two or three people that are your biggest opponents. And Ben Carson has been number two. Now he's been sliding, mainly because I think one of the big problems Ben Carson has is simply doesn't have the knowledge of foreign affairs that he needs. You don't go after someone that really, and I know, is not going to be elected president. Now, Ben Carson thinks he is, but he's not. He's trailing Donald Trump, and once he gets out of Iowa, he'll be second, third, maybe even fourth in many of these states. Oh, he's going to get delegates. I have no doubts about that, and maybe quite a few. But he's not going to be anywhere close to where Donald Trump is going to be. Donald Trump today is in his 40s. And what is he advocating regarding the Islamic State? Bomb him. I'm for bombing him. I agree with Donald Trump there, and most of the American people are. What the American people are not in favor of is sending in ground troops, so-called boots on the ground. Now, the neocons, the neoconservatives, have no problem with that. Their challenge is, as is the Republican establishment, is the American people are tired, and that's not even the right word. They're fed up with sending their sons and daughters to fight in the Middle East, to be umpires between people and groups, militias, gangs that want to kill each another and will kill each another. And if you get in the way, they'll kill you. Been there, done that, doesn't work out too well. And a lot of our sons and daughters get killed, and we spend money, a lot of money on it. And in case you haven't looked, we're in serious financial trouble. We need to get our house in order, and that's going to take decades, because it's not only the national debt, but also the unfunded liabilities. That's a problem for both Democrats and Republicans, because the big defense hawks, especially the neocon wing, want to ignore that. And the Democrats are just as bad in terms of more welfare, more entitlements. In other words, neither political party today is fiscally responsible. They're not. It doesn't matter whether it was George W. Bush or Barack Obama, we've run up massive deficits. And they're only going to get worse. And ultimately, it will lead to a default on the debt, a technical default. And what I mean by that, what will happen is the Treasury, together with the Federal Reserve, will monetize the debt, which means the purchasing power of your money will go down, down, and down. Your money will, and you'll see that in rising prices. And the people that lend money to the Treasury, our government, the principal they get back, as well as the interest they get back, will be worth less and less. What happens in that kind of situation? There always will be people that will lend money to the government if the price is right. And the price of U.S. Treasury securities, whether it's short-term Treasury bills, intermediate-term Treasury notes, or long-term Treasury bonds, the rates will go up, up, and up. In other words, the debt bomb will go off, and the interest will slowly but surely become a major budget item. Not 6% as it is today, but 12, 18, 24, and higher. Oh, it'll take some time. It doesn't happen overnight. But it does happen, and it does happen at an accelerating rate. Both political parties are in denial. Oh, there are people of both parties that understand it. The House Speaker, I think, understands the problem. Problem is, he does as much as he can talk. He doesn't want to get out front. Remember, with very few exceptions, your congressmen or women and senators are not leaders. They're followers, as is Barack Obama. He's not leading on this at all. And there are very few candidates that are running for president that would lead on this. Because why? You have to tell the American people the truth. Oh, my God. Tell them the truth. Are you out of your mind? Most Americans already know the truth. Anyone that pays attention knows the truth. And the truth will set you free, but it means what? Cutting government spending drastically. And I mean real cuts, not this phony baloney baseline budgeting. Oh, we cut the growth rate of spending. No, I'm talking the common usage of the word cut as individuals, families, businesses use the phrase cut. In other words, less money to spend. They never cut the budget. They keep increasing it, even when they're running annual budgetary deficits of hundreds of billions of dollars in a good year, and in a bad year, trillions of dollars. They won't do their jobs. That's why the American people are sick and tired of both Democrats and Republicans, their lies, their misleading, and they're leaving both parties. See, that's what they never want to talk about. All they want to invite the senator, the congressman, the speaker, or the general onto their shows and talk to them. What they don't want to talk about is, you know, we have a problem. A lot of people have left the Republican Party, or a lot of people have left the Democratic Party. I wonder what's going to happen. I'll tell you what's going to happen. And we're seeing some of that today in Donald Trump. You're going to have a new political party that does believe in a representative republic, and does believe in the Constitution, and does believe in fiscal responsibility, and does believe declaring war if it's called for. In other words, a principal party. I don't know what the name of the party will be, but I do know if you want to attract the independents that are fast approaching 50% of the electorate. They're not there yet. Give it another 5 to 10 years and they will be. It's only a matter of time before you have a new third party. Mark my word. And if the Republicans continue on the path they're on, in other words, ignoring the will of the American people, they'll be thrown out of office, just like the Democrats have been being thrown out of office in the last several elections. The difference will be at some future date. It's not going to be this year. But in some future election, you will see the formation and start of a third party that believes in balanced budgets, believes that the Constitution should not be betrayed but should be honored, and we have limited government. That's not going to happen overnight. We've had over 100 years, some would say 115 or 125. That's not the point. We've had in both parties, both the Republican and Democratic Party, over those 115 or 25 years. They've gone by different labels. Initially, they were called progressives. Then they were called themselves liberals. Now in the Democratic Party, they're back to calling themselves progressives. Others say they're moderate. What they are is for bigger and bigger government. We have two parties today that's what they're all about. Bigger and bigger government, both domestically and abroad. Which means the size and the scope of the government goes up, up, and up. Our budgetary deficits each year goes up, up, and up. Our national debt goes up. But at some point, this house of cards will fall. And one or both political parties will be replaced. Donald Trump is just one example of the future of this country. Now he, I think wisely, although I wish he had run as a third party, decided to run as a Republican. He could have run as third party. Would have been a lot more difficult, and he knew it, and costly, and decided not to do it. But at some point, you're going to have a group of people, really leaders, not followers, that are going to organize a third party And it will be very much a principled party where their candidates will have character integrity and will honor the Constitution and the oath they take and gradually turn the direction of this government and this nation around to where we have much, much of a smaller government. In other words, a limited government. It will take decades to do it. You don't turn around 115 or 120 years of bigger and bigger government overnight, or even with one president or two presidents. And as an important point here, it's not simply a case of a third party electing a president. No, it's a third party electing representatives, senators, and presidents, both at the national level and at the local level, that believe in limited government. Because while the nation of the United States has a problem, there are many, many states, including Texas, that have a debt problem. The American people know that we're living way beyond our means, and it cannot continue. And we cannot be intervening in country after country after country. The American people don't want to send their sons and daughters to the Middle East. They do want the Islamic State stopped. But the people that really should stop the Islamic State are the people that live there. In Iraq and Syria, that share the same religion. That's the Islamic religion, but they need to be Sunnis, not the Shia, that are Persians from, they're the Islamic Republic of Iran, that are Shia. And the majority in Iraq are Shia. They need to stay out of it. The problem is it's going to be very difficult for that to happen. They're not staying out of it. They're just like in Lebanon in 1983, they were using proxies, in this case, to kill Americans. And they succeeded. And not only Americans, French paratroopers as well. 299 people died in Beirut that year of three suicide bombers, blowing up first our embassy, and then several months later, the Marine barracks, as well as the barracks that was in a building that had French paratroopers. Suicide bombers, Islam, killing Americans and Europeans. They view us as the Crusaders or imperialists. They're different names. That's not the important point. People died. And why Reagan has taken some criticism for withdrawing, I think he was smart to do that. And that needs to be remembered by our neoconservatives that worked in the Reagan administration. The days of the United States being policemen of the world, intervening in country after country, are over. We cannot afford it. And the days of more and more entitlement programs, more and more welfare programs are over. We cannot afford it. And because of that, there will be a third party that will replace one or both, either the Democrat or the Republican or both parties. The people are mad. That's why Donald Trump and Ben Carson together have over 50% of the support of Republicans that will vote in these primaries. It's no accident, folks. Because when a political party and its leadership ignores the will of the American people regarding, for example, immigration, and now bringing in refugees from Syria, where we know that a small percentage of them are going to be terrorists. They're sleepers. And there's no way in hell to verify and do a background check because the records don't exist. We would be a foolish nation to allow Syrian refugees to come to this nation when we know that most, if not all of them, are Muslim, and a small but very effective minority are jihadist. And the first terrorist or the first suicide bomb, and it's very apt, the organization behind it call themselves the Islamic Jihad. They were Shia. Today, the Islamic State, they are Sunni, are continuing that very sick and evil tradition. We are supposed to learn from history, or we are condemned to repeat it. I want to conclude the show by reading a quote from a classical liberal, John Stuart Mill, that Ronald Reagan read in a speech concerning the Marines that died in Beirut. War is an ugly thing, but not the ugliest of things. The decayed and degraded state of moral and patriotic feeling which thinks that nothing is worth war, is much worse. The person who has nothing for which he is willing to fight, nothing which is more important than his own personal safety, is a miserable creature and has no chance of being free unless made and kept so by the exertions of better men than himself. I agree with that sentiment. You see, it's the Marines, the Army infantry, the professional soldier, sailor, Air Force pilots that pay the ultimate price and die for their country so you and me can be free. Before we send anyone's sons or daughters over to any country, we need to respect the rule of law and the United States Constitution by abiding by it. That's the least we owe these men and women. I am tired of hearing from people that have not spent a day in any service to their country, military service, advocating war. It's not that you can't have an opinion on that, but you need to be respectful and appreciative of the fact that people will be killed, people will be wounded. War is not a subject that should lightly be taken. That's why I'm rather insistent that we follow the Constitution, declare war, and before we declare war, have that national conversation. Because the history of this country after World War II is rather clear. Presidents have taken this country to war. Some have authorizations. But as far as I'm concerned, that's not enough. It's better than nothing, but it's not enough. We should get back to basic principles, and those that are in public offices, whether it's representatives, senators, or president, should honor the oath of office that they swear. People are going to disagree very much about going to war and what should be done. I agree the Islamic State, those religious fanatics, really they're killers, need to be destroyed. The question is, how do you do it? And who does it? In 1983, we went in to Lebanon as peacemakers, as did the French, the British, and the Italians, as well as sent in and had stationed there diplomatic and CIA personnel. 299 people got killed. And yes, we quickly pulled out. And yes, unfortunately, the terrorists learned a lesson. You can beat the United States, as well as other nations, by killing their military personnel. Good intentions are not enough. And it was good intentions by President Reagan with the objective of trying to bring the civil war in Lebanon to a close. It didn't happen. It took another 7 years. I don't want to see anything like that repeated again. With that, I'll close the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com.